Hey there, and welcome to the Wellbeing Lab podcast series, where you can discover the latest research in the fields of neuroscience and positive psychology to help great people and teams to thrive as they do the best work of their lives each day. I'm Beck Melville.
And I'm Michelle McQuaid. And guys, my wellbeing confession this week is that we've been so busy creating an exciting new product that I did decide to skip my morning run along the beach so I could try and squeeze in that extra 30 minutes of work. Of course, only to wind up by the end of the day grumpier, slower, and less productive when I should have known better. Oh dear.
Michelle, this week's podcast is probably just the reminder you need to keep things in balance. Heartfelt thanks to everyone for joining us for episode 3 of the Wellbeing Lab podcast for Zero, as we explore the recipes that can help you to thrive at work so you can realize your potential, build psychological safety, and embrace a customer mindset and help others to do the same. Today in the lab, we're heading back to explore our first PERMA ingredient and focus on the P, which stands for positive emotions. After all, if you're feeling anxious, stressed, guilty, or angry most days, it can make it almost impossible to boost your resilience so that you can realize your potential and flourish at work. So, Shell, why might mood matter so much when it comes to our resilience and performance at work?
Well, Beck, over the last decade, a growing body of research has found that the presence of heartfelt positive emotions like joy, interest, pride, inspiration, hope, gratitude, even amusement help to improve our performance on nearly every level. In fact, it seems that we're more engaged, we're more creative, motivated, productive, better at collaborating and building good relationships, and more resilient when our mindsets and our moods are positive. In fact, Dr. Daniel Goleman, who many of our listeners may be familiar with for his research in emotional and social intelligence, has found in some of his studies that up to 20 to 30% of business performance is determined by people's mood each day. Now, that number kind of rolls off the tongue, so let me say it again. Up to 20 to 30% of business performance is potentially determined by our mood at work. And yet, how many of us really have a mood strategy for ourselves or for our teams? So, Beck, as always, I'm keen to put this research to the test because we know that even the best research on human behaviour only tells us what works for some of the people some of the time. So let's see how this plays out for our listeners and for you by taking a moment to think back to one of your best days recently at work. Now, this might have been quite recent or a little while ago, either is okay, but I want you to think about one of those days where you were really looking forward to getting into work, or you found that during the day you'd lost all track of time because you were completely immersed in what you were doing or the conversations that you were having, or you found yourself heading home at the end of the day with that real quiet sense of pride and satisfaction about what you'd achieved. As you think about that day, I want you to just do a gut check for me and think about the percentage of heartfelt positive emotions you experienced on that day and the percentage of heart-straining negative emotions you might have experienced on that day. Because let's face it, even our best days, not everything always goes perfectly. So what percentage of that day were you feeling emotions like joy, interest, pride, inspiration, hope, gratitude, or amusement? Those really heartfelt positive emotions that lifted you up. And what percentage of that day were you perhaps feeling emotions like anxiety, fear, overwhelm, anger, or guilt? More of those heart-straining negative emotions. So, Beck, can you share with us how your best day might have played out recently when it comes to this balance between heartfelt positive emotions and heart-straining negative emotions?
Well, firstly, Shell, I love having these days at work. I think we all do. And the wonder that comes to mind straight away is last week when I was facilitating a workshop for a new client who wanted to address some issues they'd been having with their team. That morning, I definitely felt a little bit anxious, even a little bit fearful of where it all might land. But I was also aware that I was feeling grateful for the opportunity and hopeful of what we might achieve. So the day got underway and people were coming up with ideas of how they could better support each other and work together. The sticky notes were flying up onto the flip charts, and we even managed to have an elephant in the room conversation that needed to be had in such a respectful and helpful way. And before I knew it, the day was over and people were thanking me for a great session and telling me that it was time really well spent. So as I drove home that night, I had this great sense of satisfaction that I'd done something really good, and I was experiencing lots of those emotions you just described, Shell. A little bit of joy, a little bit of pride, a little bit of hope that the team would actually follow through with their actions. There was also a little bit of disappointment about one section I think I could have debriefed better, but that was quickly replaced by a feeling of real gratitude for the work that I get to do. So, Shell, if I come back to your original question, which is what percentage of positive to negative emotions I experienced on that day, I'd probably land on about 80-20 for this one.
Beck, it sounds like an amazing day. And as you mentioned, we all love having these days where we feel in the zone or we're one with the music. And the good news, of course, is that we all do have them. But the frequency with which we experience them is often shaped by our ability to understand and appreciate and replicate what it is that makes these days possible. And this is where I think the research on heartfelt positive emotions is so interesting for us to explore, because the more we understand what's making these days possible, the easier it is for us to create more of them and to boost our resilience in the process. So Professor Barbara Fredrickson at the University of North Carolina has found, Beck, that just like your example, people who are consistently thriving at work are experiencing both heartfelt positive emotions and some heart-straining negative emotions in there as well. And she suggests that the way to think about how these emotions work is a little like the balance between levity and gravity. So too many heartfelt positive emotions, just like too much levity, and we risk floating away and being disconnected from reality. But too many heart-straining negative emotions, just like too much gravity, can leave us flat on the floor and unable to get up, which of course is often what people who are experiencing depression are really struggling with. And while the ideal number of how much heartfelt positivity to how much heart-straining negativity you want seems to vary among different people, what Barb's research and others have consistently found is that we definitely need more heartfelt positivity if we're going to thrive and feel resilient as we tackle our lives each day. Now, I want to be clear that not for a moment is anyone suggesting that you want to find ways to get rid of all the heart-straining negativity and just be positive all the time. Think about that levity-gravity balance. Instead, if you're going to be more emotionally flexible, it helps to understand how different emotions serve you in different ways when it comes to your resilience, your well-being, and your performance each day. So, for example, Barb's studies have found that when you experience heartfelt positive emotions, it seems to broaden your brain. So you can see more of what's happening around you because your field of peripheral vision actually expands to take in about 75% of what's going on, compared to only 15% when you're in a neutral or negative mood. You're often able to think more quickly and creatively because your brain has been flooded with those feel-good neurotransmitters of dopamine and serotonin. And because your brain feels safe in those moments of heartfelt positivity, you're much more likely to start thinking about we and how you work well with others, and a little less obsessed and preoccupied with thinking just about me, making it all about yourself, because you're not so much in survival mode. Now, Barbara's also found that as these experiences of heartfelt positive emotions accrue over time, a little bit like money in the bank for a rainy day, they can also help to build your psychological, social, intellectual, and physical resources and create this wonderful upward spiral for you of learning, of growth, of connection and resilience that helps you to thrive even in the most challenging of times. And Barb calls this the broaden and build theory of positive emotions. And Beck, my favourite part of her research is that we all have lots of really small and effective ways that we already create these opportunities for heartfelt positivity in our days. So none of us are starting from zero when it comes to building this ingredient of well-being. The trick really is figuring out what already works well for each of us and prioritising more of those moments into our days. So Beck, I'm curious, what do you find creates some of that heartfelt positive emotion in your world that perhaps our listeners can steal with pride for themselves if they're needing a few extra ways to boost their own feelings of positive emotion?
Shell, I have three favourites when it comes to creating more heartfelt positivity in my days. The first is heading back to nature. If I've been attached to that computer screen for a few hours, something as simple as going outside, sitting under a tree and breathing can instantly generate heartfelt positivity for me. And studies completely support this activity, with researchers finding that things that are green or blue are particularly good for improving our mood. Secondly, I try to make a conscious effort to savor things around me and get grateful. It might be taking a few extra moments to enjoy that morning coffee rather than gulping it down, showing heartfelt gratitude to someone by making time to thank them personally for helping me with something, and even on the drive home, playing back some of my favorite conversations from the day. I know some people swear by doing their three things I'm grateful for over dinner or writing in a gratitude journal, and these are also great ways to practice gratitude and savoring if they work for you. Then lastly, Shell, and this may not come as any surprise to you, I really enjoy carrying out acts of kindness with a 5-minute favor. Now, this might be sharing an article with someone, making an introduction between colleagues who I think might benefit from knowing each other, and even just putting aside the technology and spending time with someone who needs to chat. So these are all small ways, remembering that they generally take less than 5 minutes in my day, that produce a surge of positive emotions for me and, in most cases, the other person.
Beck, what I love about each of these practices that you've shared is that they are small jolts of joy that you can easily prioritise into your day. And so we'll be sure to capture these and add a few extra favourites into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet, which our listeners can download from the same spot where they found this podcast. I have to say, though, I often find that the biggest aha moment for most people around this research is not that heartfelt positivity really matters at work or even what they can do practically, but that they need to consistently prioritise opportunities for those jolts of joy each day. So much like brushing our teeth or going to the bathroom, I think these jolts of joy aren't nice to have moments when we're not so busy. They really need to become must-have moments in our day if we want to be able to have the resilience and the energy to keep performing at our best. I also think it's really important to be aware that our emotions are highly contagious. In fact, some studies suggest that it takes less than 7 minutes for a leader's mood to infect an entire team. So prioritizing these moments of heartfelt positivity in your day isn't just good for you, it's good for everyone around you. So when you find yourself feeling a little flat, struggling a little lately at work, feeling like you need to boost your resilience a little bit more, reaching for a jolt of joy in a moment of heartfelt positivity is one of the very best ways that you can get yourself back into the space you want to be.
So, Shell, I love the fact that positive emotions can boost our resilience and help us to perform better so we can thrive more consistently at work. But our listeners are still living in the real world, and ultimately life happens, and we all experience times when our negative emotions are just dragging us down. So what do we do with the negativity so it doesn't wear down our resilience?
Well, Beck, remember that Barb's research shows that these negative emotions also matter. And while it can be really tempting to try and ignore them or suppress them or distract ourselves from these feelings because they narrow our brain in to focus on the things that are making us feel anxious or guilty or angry, in actual fact, these emotions also often offer really important learning and growth opportunities for us. So rather than fearing these negative emotions because they feel uncomfortable for us, Dr. Robert Biswas-Diener and his colleagues suggest that we think about emotions like fear and anger or anxiety a little like those old-fashioned telephones that used to sit on our desk, and the only way to know who was calling was to pick up the phone and listen. So these uncomfortable emotions are your body's internal telephone system that's ringing to say, hey, I need to tell you something, pick up and pay attention so you can figure out what you need to do next. Now, of course, unfortunately, Beck, many of our listeners might relate to the fact that rather than answering these calls, we often try to let them ring out. We take the phone off the hook or even disconnect it entirely. But once we learn that even though those calls can feel uncomfortable, and sometimes, let's be honest, they can bring pain for us, they're actually just our body's way of trying to keep us safe, of helping us to learn, and of nudging us towards being the people that we want to be, then it starts to make sense to answer that internal phone when it rings and really listen to what those emotions are trying to tell us. The truth is that those uncomfortable feelings only really become big problems for our resilience when we try to ignore them, when we numb ourselves from them, when we recycle them endlessly without taking action, or we project them onto other people, all of which undermines our levels of resilience and causes our energy to leak out in places we don't need it. But Beck, I know it can be hard to start answering some of those calls of our uncomfortable emotions. So I'm curious, have you got any tips or approaches that you found work well for the people that you coach that our listeners might be able to steal with pride and to put into practice for themselves?
Shell, I was actually sitting with a client the other day and we had this exact conversation. So let me share with you the three tips that I gave to them to plug the energy leaks that can occur when we don't listen to what those uncomfortable emotions are trying to tell us. Firstly, reflect, don't ruminate. Instead of going over and over something that didn't play out the way you'd planned, you called it recycling negativity, Shell. Try distracting yourself in healthy ways. So go for a walk or phone a friend, listen to your favorite song, or even find a YouTube video that makes you laugh so that you can plug the energy leaks. Secondly, borrowing from the researcher Professor Brené Brown, I'd suggest you get curious and don't judge, because generally the moment we step into judgment, and we've all been there, it's not very positive for ourselves or for anyone else for that matter. So instead, ask what might be happening in that moment for yourself, what might be happening for the other person, and be open to finding new ways forward together. So remember, don't judge, get curious. Thirdly, I'd also suggested to this client that they limit their social media intake, because when you see Sally's got that big new promotion and Ben's in business class off to yet another overseas conference, you naturally start to make comparisons and you can feel like you're falling behind. Instead, refocus on what you're achieving and what's most important to you. So here's my tip: stay in your own lane to avoid social comparison.
Beck, I love those tips. And again, we'll be sure to put them into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet for our listeners, along with some of our other favourite ways to get comfortably uncomfortable with negative emotions.
Sounds like a plan. But Shell, as we both know, even when we're personally equipped with all of these wonderful strategies, sometimes the level of stress in our lives can completely undermine our resilience. So what then?
Well, Beck, with media headlines like stress kills, it's easy to get really stressed about the stress that we're experiencing at work. What's interesting, though, is that for every study that finds that stress undermines our resilience, our performance, and our well-being, researchers can now also point to a study that shows the exact opposite and actually suggests that experiencing stress can have all sorts of benefits for us. And while this might sound a little counterintuitive for our listeners at first, if we take a moment and think about the experiences in our own lives, we all will have had times where stress has absolutely wiped us out, but we'll also all have times where stress has actually helped us to step up, to do more than we previously imagined we were capable of, and to perform in a way that was much better than had we not experienced those stressful pressures in those moments. So how does this work? Well, the truth is that like all of our emotions, stress in itself really appears to be neither good nor bad for us. But what Dr. Aaliyah Crum at Stanford University and her colleagues have found is that our body actually has multiple stress responses. And which one we reach for, and whether it boosts or drains our resilience in that moment, is largely determined about the beliefs that we have about stress. So, for example, Beck, most of our listeners will be aware of their fight or flight stress response that gets triggered off when they believe that stress signals something harmful is about to happen to them, and it creates that surge of cortisol and fearful energy and motivation that primes them for self-defense and makes them really vigilant for signs that things are not going well. And while this can be great in short bursts, it can also create a really vicious cycle where our heightened attention to what's going wrong starts to fill us with self-doubt, and it leaves us with more cortisol, which can be associated with impaired immune function and depression when we have too much of it for too long. But Beck, although our listeners might not consciously be aware of it, I'm pretty sure that they will have all experienced at times their challenge stress response as well. And this is when we get pushed outside our comfort zone. And as a result, even though we might be struggling, we're also in that space where we're really learning and we're gaining new skills that are important to us. So when we believe that stress is an opportunity for learning and growth, it creates this powerful mix of endorphins, adrenaline, testosterone, and dopamine, and it leaves us with higher levels of DHEA, which is a neurosteroid that helps us to recover and to learn from stress. So our challenge stress response fuels us with feelings of confidence and power and that willingness to learn. And then lastly, Beck, there is our tend and befriend response that our listeners will also have experienced or seen in action, which gets triggered when we care for others in moments of stress, like when a community rallies around each other to help at times of disaster. And in these moments, our levels of oxytocin are increased to help inhibit our fear centers of our brain and improve our feelings of empathy and of trust and connection. Dopamine gets released to help us feel more motivated and optimistic about our ability to do something meaningful, and the neurotransmitter serotonin is activated to enhance our perception, our intuition, our self-control, so that we can ensure our actions will have the biggest positive impact. And all of this helps us to transform fear into bravery and powerlessness into optimism. Now, I want to be really clear here again, not suggesting for a moment that all stress is good for us, so we should just keep piling it on. Remember, we want to be intelligent as we explore this research and to find out what serves each of us best in different situations. So instead, I think the message to take away from this research is that it's really helpful to understand when that internal phone is ringing in our bodies with a message that we're feeling stressed. It's just our body's way of telling us that something important to us is at stake in this moment. And based on the situation we're in and what's going to serve us best in that moment, we can choose to interpret that message as needing a fight or flight, a challenge, or a tend and befriend stress response, and that this will set in motion different neurological, physiological, psychological, and social responses for us to draw on. So, Beck, can you help our listeners explore how they might be able to use their PERMA three-point check in these moments when their internal phone is ringing from stress to help make figuring out which stress response they want to reach for a little bit easier for them?
Shell, this is one of my favorite pieces of research, and I've actually spent many, many hours trying to put it into practice since I first learned about it. And I think the best way that I can bring this to life for you is probably to share a story. So, towards the end of last year, I had a major piece of work that I had to deliver for a client while I was juggling family and part-time studies, interstate travel, and a number of other clients who also needed things finished yesterday. And in the midst of all of this, while I was interstate, my computer charger died. And in that moment, I could feel the panic setting into every cell of my body as I tried to figure out how I could possibly get everything done before my laptop battery also died. So knowing that I was starting to leak precious energy all over the place, none of which was getting me any closer to finishing what needed to be done, I realized that my internal phone was ringing away and that I needed to pick it up and start listening with my PERMA three-point check at the ready. So how was I feeling? I was feeling stressed, my heart was beating faster and faster, and my stress levels were rising by the minute. What was I thinking? I can't get this done. I'm going to let my client down. They'll never ask me to work with them again. I hate technology. And then who did I want to be in this moment? I realized I needed to trigger my challenge stress response to try to reframe this as an opportunity for learning and growth and quickly make some decisions about the most important things that I needed to get into this document so I could send it in the time I had available. And in that moment, I went from panicking about what I couldn't control to getting completely focused and engaged on what I could control. And the battery ended up lasting just long enough for me to get the client what they needed. So when I look back on this example, it's a great lesson for me because I'm reminded that I can deal with stressful situations by listening to my internal phone when it rings and taking a moment to use my PERMA 3-point check so I can respond in ways that boost my resilience, even in the most challenging of moments.
Beck, I think that's such a great example because most of us have had moments where technology fails us at work and adds to our stress load rather than easing it. And it's such a beautiful demonstration of how that PERMA 3-point check can help us choose which stress response we want to reach for so we can be intelligent about how we're showing up to boost our resilience.
Shell, there's no doubt that I'd prefer to be having more of those best days than those stress days, but I do feel more resilient and confident knowing I can reframe the situation if and when I need to. So Shell, let's see if you can put some of these strategies into practice now as we dive into what we like to call our, drum roll please, the Let's Get Real round. Are you ready, Shell?
Absolutely, Beck. Fire away.
The first question is, I'm so busy, I'm not even getting through my to-do list. So how on earth do I find the time to nurture positive emotions?
Beck, how old I'm too busy trap again. Now, we've talked in our first two podcasts about banning I'm too busy from our vocabulary because, of course, it's normally a cover for I don't know how, I can't do it, or I don't want to do it. And instead, trying to adopt a kindness mindset for ourselves and being that wise and kind coach that we need as we pull out our SDT guide for success steps of setting a want-to goal for what this daily jolt of joy might look like, of tracking our progress by creating a little feedback loop so we're seeing how we're going and adjusting accordingly, and of buddying up so that we've got the social support that we need to maintain this change. So for example, Beck, let's say our listeners want to try your jolt of joy of heading back to nature. So their want-to choice might be taking 10 minutes to step outside and eat their lunch under a tree or in a park or by the water, depending what their options are. Because we covered in our last podcast the importance of eating lunch as one of the best ways to maximise our energy, so we should be doing that anyway. And taking a minute or two to move away from our desks and get outside and get some fresh air as we do it near something that's green or blue can really supercharge that well-being strategy. It's what I like to refer to as a twofer well-being strategy, where you're getting two benefits for one action that you're taking. Then, in order to track their progress, one way to do this would be as they head out to lunch, they could note down on their notepad or on their smartphone a score out of 10 for how they've been feeling that morning. And then, as they head back from lunch, to score themselves again so they can see what impact this little well-being strategy has been having for them. Now, some days might be more or less, and that's okay, but this simple act of creating an easy feedback loop will help them to see if this jolt of joy is working and how they might adjust it to make it more effective. And then lastly, they could buddy up by inviting a colleague or friend to eat with them, much easier to do it with somebody else each day, or just let someone at home or at work know that this is what they're trying to do and to please check in with them every now and then on how their outdoor lunch picnics are going.
You know, Michelle, I love a two-for-one deal, so I think this is a great example of how we can stack our well-being habits. My second question for you today is, I have a colleague who I work closely with and they're super negative. So much so, I've been avoiding having conversations with them and it's actually starting to impact my performance and how I'm feeling at work. So what can I do?
Unfortunately, Beck, this is often a common challenge we see in workplaces, and of course it undermines our levels of psychological safety. So I think the first really important thing to do with our more negative colleagues, those colleagues who are struggling to feel comfortably uncomfortable with what they're facing each day, is to recognise that this is a person who's projecting their pain onto others because they don't know how to listen to their own internal phone yet. So where we can, and I recognise this can be challenging, we want to reach for our PERMA three-point check and tune into how we're feeling, why we're feeling that way, and who we want to be as we step forward to take action. And Beck, if we can, this is a great time to practice your suggestion of don't judge, get curious, so that we can reach for our compassion to understand more about what might be happening in their world, rather than making our own internal phone start ringing off the hook because we're feeling anxious or angry or uncomfortable with them and projecting a whole lot of our stuff onto the situation as well. So think of this person as an unexpected gift to practice boosting your own resilience and try not to judge, but to get curious about this situation and use your PERMA three-point check to help navigate your way through it. But Beck, if that feels like just too big an ask, then just try to manage your own resilience in the moment by minimizing the amount of time that you spend around these people if you can. Inoculate yourself with a little jolt of joy prior to seeing them so that your brain is in a better neurological space to be able to deal with whatever might unfold. And then be sure to restore a bit of heartfelt positive emotion after spending time with these people so that they don't continue to drain your resilience and energy through the rest of the day.
So, Shell, I just want to commit this to memory. Minimize, inoculate, and restore. Got it. Okay, so the third question today is, we're going through a significant change at work at the moment. There's a lack of certainty. There's lots of rumors going around and people are stressed out. It's definitely impacting the mood of our whole team. So what can we do to get back on track?
So Beck, we all have these moments at work where it feels like everything is getting on top of the team around us and it can completely erase our sense of psychological safety with each other and drain our resilience in the process. So one of my favourite ways to reset the mood of a team in these moments is simply by starting team meetings or conversations with the question, what's working well right now? Now, that might seem like a strange question to ask when it feels like everything is going wrong, but even in those moments, I promise that if you look hard enough, you will find that small things are still working. And it's these small things that are going to help to restore your confidence, your motivation, your heartfelt positivity, and your sense of psychological safety with each other. Now, this can be done as an open question, can be done as a round-the-table check-in for a team or in paired or small group discussions to really try and help move people into that broadened neurological state that Barbara Fredrickson's research identified so that then together you can start to see opportunities to try and improve what's unfolding. You can start to begin thinking more quickly and creatively about what's going on and you can start to feel safer with each other again. Now, this doesn't mean that you don't still tackle the tough issues as the meeting continues. It just means that you get to do so from a place where people have the neurological resources that they're most likely to need to tackle them well and to tackle them together. In fact, sometimes a great follow-up question is, and where are we struggling right now? And how can we help each other through that? So we'll add some additional tips for running more positive meetings into the Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet today so that if your team is struggling, you can try and create a little more heartfelt positivity so that you've got the resilience and the psychological safety to tackle what's ahead. But simply starting your meetings with the question, what's working well, is a great place to begin.
Shell, I love that you've given us such practical ways that we can address some of these challenges in the workplace. So thank you so much. And we can't wait to join you for the next Wellbeing Lab podcast for Zero, when we'll learn all about building more psychological safety by developing our strengths and harnessing our neurological superpowers so we can feel like we belong. And to our listeners, thank you so much for being here with us today. It's been such a joy to spend this time with you and to share practical and tested ways to nurture positive emotions. And to help you put these ideas into action so you haven't wasted the last 30 minutes of your life, why not try today's Wellbeing Lab Challenge? Firstly, to improve your own levels of positivity, what's one small thing you can do each day this week to give yourself a little heartfelt boost and additional energy? It might be injecting a jolt of joy, heading back to nature, a 5-minute favor, getting grateful, reflecting, not ruminating, plugging the energy leaks, or staying in your own lane. Just pick one thing you can start with and use your kindness mindset to help you create your SDT guide for success by making sure you've made a want-to choice, that you can track your progress, and that you buddy up.
Secondly, to improve your team's levels of positivity, why not see if you can run a more positive meeting? The easy way to do this, remember, is simply starting with that question, what's working well right now? And let people share what's happening at work or outside of work that's creating some heartfelt positivity before you dive into the agenda, and just start to notice what happens in those meetings as a result. And of course, as always, we'll put all of these and more tips into today's Wellbeing Lab cheat sheet for you, which you can download from the same place where you found this podcast. After all, as Barbara Fredrickson wisely said, positivity is a choice we all need to make again and again, day after day. You've been listening to the Wellbeing Lab podcast with Michelle McQuaid.
And Beck Melville. Until the next episode, take care and stay well.